Hi, good morning. It's Imogen here. I'm back with my guest, Shay Seaborne, to continue our discussions about stress and trauma and how the Alexander Technique can help people suffering from those things. And the particular topic we're going to talk about today is stress and trauma and the neuroscience of those things and how that intersects with some Alexander Technique practices. And in particular, Shay's going to help us learn about down regulation, titration, and co-regulation and how they're really important tools, if that's the right term for anyone dealing with a lot of stress or trauma. So Shay is, I guess, a trauma survivor, but is a trauma awareness activist. She's been my client for 2 or 3 years, and has become a good friend, and we get very excited, or I do, when she tells me about, oh, the neuroscience and the neurobiology of this. It just goes hand in hand with what we were doing in class. And so we're actually going to bring that to you today. So Shay, welcome again. This is our third conversation. And maybe you could just start off, how did you get interested in the neuroscience part? How did that tie in with your own kind of learning and journey, I suppose? Yeah.
It actually came out of trying to figure out, how, what happened to me and how to resolve it. I basically went down every avenue that seemed, likely to help. And as I got more into actual trauma theory, I discovered that PTSD is not a mental health issue. It is actually a neurological injury, a disruption of the normal nervous system. So it's a pretty big deal. But knowing that, it was so freeing because I realized this is a normal, natural response to abnormal conditions. So everything I've experienced was, protecting me from the toxic environment in which I was raised. And that helped me understand it's not a lack of willpower, saying the right words at the right church at the right time, or refusing to let it go, or just not being strong enough to pull myself up by my bootstraps. It really took all the shame away. It's not a character flaw, it's an injury. So as I went down the neurobiology rabbit hole, I ran into Dr. Dan Siegel, who talks about interpersonal neurobiology. And that really hooked me in because I see a lot of that. I see Alexander as involved in that. And I know we haven't really talked about that particular thing, but I'll probably talk about that more when we get to co-regulation at the end.
Okay. Yes, so you've identified three particular concepts, but they're also I guess interventions that you can use for yourself for anyone. Is that the right word?
Coping tools.
Coping tool. Good. That's great.
No back coping tools. Those are the best kind, the kind that don't leave you hungover or addicted or whatever.
So you identified three key coping tools that are based on the neuroscience or have been identified through that as ways to is resolve or at least deal with.
They can help us deal with our symptoms, but the main thing is they help us change our nervous system toward the kind of nervous system that we want to have in a world that isn't, the toxic childhood environment.
So maybe resolve is on the right track, but we mustn't think you do this once and it's resolved. It's on the path to resolution, hopefully, and will certainly help you along the way. Yeah. Okay. So the first one that you wanted to talk about is down regulation. So you want to just tell us what that is, and then maybe we'll tie in what you've learned in Alexander that has helped you do this.
Down regulation. I always say, if I could teach one skill to everybody in the whole world, it would be down regulation. Especially right now, we all really need to know how to calm ourselves down, and that's what it is. It's just learning, practicing a skill or a set of skills that can help you bring your internal state to the calm, safe, clear thinking, pro-social state that is our normal activation level. When we get too far outside of that for too long, that's trauma.
Well, I think, Alexander, that's basically one thing that it's the whole thing is about, however it's taught, and there are many different ways that different teachers teach, and a really traditional way, which is not available to the vast majority of teachers right now, is in-person lessons, which include a very gentle touch, which I do think helps people down regulate. But maybe there's also, if they're in a place that they can accept the touch, however, that's not really available to anyone right now.
Fortunately, we have other ways we can co-regulate.
We certainly do. And so tell me what you found particularly helpful about to help you down-regulate through what you've been learning, I guess, with me.
Well, my first down-regulation skills were the most common ones that you can, you know, Google to find, you know, mindful breath, you know, longer exhale, and, you know, crossing the arms, holding the self, doing, you know, soothing motions. And all that's really great, and it's very easy to learn, and it works immediately. But it's not something you want to like go around doing in front of other people all the time. Like, you know, in the boardroom or the, you know, in front of in the conference when you're talking and you start to feel like it's like announcing, I'm really anxious. It's not necessarily a bad thing to do that, but our culture is not supportive of that. And you know, a lot of people just don't want to call that kind of attention to themselves. So I find that the cycle is really very good for down regulating, and it's just so non-coercive and gentle and effective, and it's silent and it's quick, and you can do it anywhere. You don't even have a pocket to put it in.
Exactly. So Shay is referring to practice, exercise, if you like, called the cycle, which I teach as a foundational practice to all my students. And this comes from, for anyone interested, directly from the work of an Alexander teacher called Mio Morales and his primal Alexander work, which is kind of getting back to what Alexander, the founder of the Alexander technique, did himself. He didn't have hands on to help him improve the use of his body and release tension. He had to use his own thinking. So he's kind of gone back to some of that and also created his own ways of doing that. And I've really love it and have run with it, and I've found it super helpful for me to calm my nervous system. And I teach it to all my clients now. And as Shay says, it's a really simple concept, but it takes time to and practice to get the most out of it, get the down regulation. I usually talk about calming your own nervous system, which I think is the same thing. It's involving your thinking, and it's a way of practicing thinking about being more at ease in yourself, and actually not being at ease, noticing ease, and you don't even have to do that. I'll mention it again at the end, but for our next video, we thought we'd take a little break from a conversation, and I will teach this practice the way I do it, and that'll be next week. Anything else you want to say about that down regulation before we move on to the next?
Just that the wording of the that we use with the cycle, it's noticing and free. There's no bind in that. And as a person who was, you know, subjected to authoritarian rule for so much of my life, down to minutia, it's really important to have that sense of agency. And I think, you know, that goes for anybody. It makes it easier if, you know, somebody's not shoving it in your face, even yourself. If you're just free to notice something, there's no obligation.
Yeah. The phrase that we will be using, and I'll talk more about next time, is I am free to notice ease. From an Alexander point of view, we want to use words that don't create more tension. And when we are free and we're not being coercive and we're just allowing and we have permission and we don't have to, it seems to help with releasing tension. Okay, so let's move on to titration. Okay. What is titration?
You may have encountered it as a chemistry term. If you ever played with baking soda and vinegar, when I was a little kid, we had a pill bottle with a plastic cork and we would put the baking soda in and take it outside and then dump the vinegar in, put the cork on, shake it up, and it would shoot the cork across the yard. Lots of cheap fun. but that's not what we want inside of us. That's not how we want to deal with difficult emotions or memories. Titration would be like having that jar with the vinegar in it. With the baking soda, and instead of dumping the vinegar in, you just put a dropper full in. So it's going to bubble up a little bit, but it's going to stay contained in the jar. And after a minute or two, it'll go back down. And then when you feel like it's time, you can add another drop. And that way you can control that chemical reaction and release the charge that's between those two things without having an explosion. And this is a much better way to deal with your nervous system. Mm-hmm. It's not here for entertainment. So
would the analogy be that is to do with some event or idea or person or situation that is stressful or traumatic to mm-hmm. you, but it allows you to dip into it in a very minute and way that you can also come out of. So you right. don't have to dip in, then you're suddenly immersed in it and you can't.
Yes, it's a way of avoiding, you know, being overwhelmed by it, you know, especially mm-hmm. if you have traumatic memories. They can be completely overwhelming and incapacitating. I've had some flashbacks that, you know, took days or weeks to recover from, and it's not a very good life. So I'm learning to titrate it through my somatic experiencing and also through one of the Alexander practices. So what it does is it allows us to turn toward notice the tension patterns and then reorient to safety. So it's mm-hmm. like you said, just a little bit. I mean, most people could handle this much of any horrible thing because you know it's going to be just that little bit and it's mm-hmm. done and it's not a continual stress. So that's really important for a very important skill for dealing with traumatic or stressful experiences.
Would this apply to something that is happening right now? I'm just thinking of your experience at the dentist, or is that a different thing?
Actually, the surgery was the thing that popped into my head because
the what? Sorry,
preparing for surgery for the major.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was terrifying for me. And I remember when we started doing the Alexander practice, that really helped me. I couldn't even like say the word surgery without my body going, ah! Yeah. So we had to use the word procedure and, you know, start way over there. But yeah, through doing that back and forth, you know, just touching into my terror about the surgery and then coming back out of it really very quickly, because I've practiced with you so much, very quickly helped me feel a lot safer about, you know, going in to be cut open.
Yeah. So this is an exercise I kind of do with clients, students a little bit down the road called the 17 steps. And the cycle sort of provides a foundation. You built that ability to be able to have that come back and have that little bit of ease in yourself. Mm-hmm. And so once you know you can do that, then it enables you to dip into things. It can also be used in a much more mundane ways than this, but it's
deciding whether you want to keep that shirt or not.
Yeah, exactly. Or even how you're moving your body or something very, but yes, it can be quite powerful when
yeah, and because it's a choice.
Yes.
You know, the choice, like when we do that 17 steps, the freedom is there to touch on it and move immediately away if I need to, or to stay there for a little bit, either way. Mm-hmm. And so that choice is important, and knowing that I have the control, but also we talk about muscle memory for repetitive tasks. Well, we have, you know, the same kind of thing for neurological memories. So every time I do an Alexander exercise, I'm, like you said, building on all those other times that I practiced it. So my body responds even better to the noticing, the freedom to notice.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And as you said, because you're practicing interrupting the thought of something that is disturbing to you with the ease, and you kind of do this in a systematic way a few times, it can, you start, like you say, the muscle memory around that thing maybe starts to change a little bit, to soften a little bit, so it's not quite as harsher.
Yes,
doesn't mean these things don't remain difficult.
Right. Didn't like magically make all the problems with surgery go away, but it certainly made my experience of preparing for it and going through that more tolerable, because it was easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think we should move on to co-regulation, the third thing that you'd identified. So explain that to us.
This is my favorite part. This is where Dr. Siegel's work really comes in. Interpersonal neurobiology. We have what are called mirror neurons inside us that pick up on other people's affect, energy, and even read things like the energy. He says it's not a you know, airy fairy thing. It's, you know, the photons that land on your face coming into my eyes, and I'm, you know, reading the crinkles that tell me that your smile is genuine and you mean me no harm. And we all do that, you know, like instantly. Some, you know, sometimes, and some people better, you know, we're better at it and worse at it, depending on all kinds of things, including where we are inside. Yeah. You know, if you're in a bad mood and people have been mean to you a lot of your life, and you're focused on how hard life is, and somebody goes like this, you might see it as a threat. And somebody else might be like, hey, right back, because they're in a different activation state. So co-regulation is really helpful. I mean, it happens all the time. We do it right now through the video, because I can read your face and hear your voice and see your gestures and so on. So it's certainly better than not seeing you at all. But yes, in person was definitely very important for me, especially at the beginning. And co-regulation is especially important because we can also help each other down-regulate. So as you've done for me, I don't know how many times in class, and in all of us in class, in your body intelligence class, you know, we meet every week and talk about, you know, where things are with us and with, you know, all the crazy stuff in the world. Usually at least one of us is kind of janked up anxious about something. And so three of us actually, you know, calm each other down that way. So to describe it more clearly, it would be like if I came to you and I was like, I don't know, upset about something that happened, and you were like, you are usually very calm and and solid, and you just stayed in that mode. That's all you would really have to do is like, you know, be interested in what I'm saying and, you know, pay attention, but just stay calm in yourself. And my mirror neurons will pick up on that and go, oh, maybe there isn't a crisis here, because my, you know, clanmate here is not anxious. So, oh, maybe I can calm down. And it just naturally happens, but the reverse can happen too.
I think a lot of us have been in situations where you walk in your room, in a room, and you've not even heard anything, but you immediately know there's something's going on in here. Yeah. Or you walk in a room and like, wow, this is lovely, you know, so welcoming and friendly. But I think it's interesting about, you know, the video calls, and there's loads more of them right now on Zooms and everything, that there's so much that we're picking up from the other people on the screens from each other that we maybe downplay. And I think in our group together on Zoom, it's very much part of it that, that we're all benefiting from each other, that we're, you know, when we're, to use your term, down-regulating, it helps us all down-regulate even more, because we're also, it's not just the work, inner work we're doing ourselves, we're also receiving that non-verbal down-regulation from other people.
And that's exactly what we're wired for, and why we need to pay attention to this stuff right now. We are wired to help each other heal and to connect with each other at the heart level, as my friend LJ calls it. And the most amazing thing about the interpersonal neurobiology I've discovered is the very things that help us recover from complex PTSD, that's the kind that's, you know, a lifetime's worth, that started out as developmental trauma, the same things that help us recover from that are the same things that prevent PTSD from occurring, and the same things that we are biologically wired for, connection with each other.
And I think that's really I think that's really important what you said. So what we're doing with these practices, and I know you have other things that you do as well, but that's not only helping you resolve or heal a little bit, or however you want to word that, but it could be helping you prevent further trauma in the future, or it could be helping anyone who's not been traumatized, is just a little stressed, from it getting to that next level.
Yes.
Or if they come into a situation that could be traumatic, it helps them deal with it in a way that it might not escalate maybe in quite the same way.
It's just it's like endless, you know, good stuff, neurobiological stuff about Alexander. We can build up, it's resilience is kind of like a bank account. You can build build that, and Alexander technique is
putting money in the bank.
That's right. Putting my resilience chips in there, you know, it's like gold in there, and it is wonderful to have a bank to draw on when you need that, and to know that it's there. And yes, for everyday stresses, it's really good to have, you know, take a little bit out of it and then put some back in. And that's a big part of where the trauma is coming up today, because of COVID. A lot of people haven't been filling their you know, a little bank of resilience. And because our whole society kind of demands that we run ourselves ragged, just to be grateful we even have a job. So a lot of people are run down, and then something like, you know, a worldwide pandemic happens, and it just throws a wrench in everything. And if you don't have resources built up for something like that, it's going to be much, much harder to weather it safely and without, you know, ending up with PTSD.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very glad I had all this learning and skills that I've built going into this. And some,
like I have a 2-year jump on everybody else.
Exactly. I'm thinking about what you said about the titration and the how we're picking up from other people and the nonverbals, and how Alexander, I think in whatever form you learn, is helping you release tension and improve your posture and be more expansive and open. And that, in a from a nonverbal point of view, will be giving off very different and more helpful, more signals to the people you come in contact with.
Yes, and that's a really important observation, that whatever we cultivate inside of us is what we're radiating out to other people. Their mirror neurons are picking up on it, and we do have an effect. I mean, just think about, like, you're at a store, or you used to go to the store and chit-chat with the person at the checkout, and you know, they said something nice to you, and you have this little exchange, and you feel good about it. And you're smiling as you walk out the store, and somebody else comes in, and maybe they're kind of grumpy even, and they look at you, and they see you're smiling, and they smile back, and they feel better.
Yeah, actually, there's there's research on smiling, and it's really hard not to smile back at a real smile. Mm-hmm. It's a good contagious thing, you know. It's so much helpful about smiling, but obviously not forcing it, because that's a bit different from
different. But a fake smile that's not forced. Just, you know, this is a real smile, but it's making me feel like I'm smiling. The body and the brain don't know the difference between a fake smile and a real smile.
I think there's research done. They just had people put a which sort of puts the mouth in the smile position, and the research showed that the mood was improved. I don't have the exact information, but I'm remembering that.
But it is another wonderful neurobiological coping mechanism, a tool that we can use. An acquaintance of mine named Kathy says, "Just smile." And it's true. If you can just, you know, when you're feeling tense or whatever, just stop and smile. And you'll feel better. And that breaks that, you know, cycle of distress.
Yeah, because even if you're not feeling like it, you're giving your own body the signal that you're happy or things are okay or whatever a smile means. So it's another way of interrupting, I guess, or disrupting what could have been disturbing you.
It's a signal of safety to the body. That's the key thing. Safety. We are wired to keep ourselves safe first, and if we feel safe, we can be open and pro-social and curious and have you know, difficult discussions and really connect. But if we are feeling angry and protective, we are closing ourselves off from other people and connection, and that, if it becomes a chronic thing, will rewire your nervous system to be angry and protected and disconnected, and that brings on, you know, the cascade of chronic disease and all kinds of awful things. It's really, really bad for us.
We'd like to do these in 20 minutes, but we're not really achieving that right now. Anything else before we finish up you wanted to just add about any of the things we've discussed today?
No, I think I've blathered on long enough.
So just to reiterate what I was saying earlier, that next time, next Friday, same place, same time, I will actually teach this practice called the cycle, the way I do it, so that hopefully you can at least start learning this important tool. It's really simple. Maybe deceptive. Yes, I'm powerful. And I am also going to put in the comments, as I've done before, a link to my Facebook group, the Body Intelligence Community. I think there's lots of good value you can get there. But on Thursdays in particular, I guide what I call a little power pause, just 2 or 3 minutes long. And I think talking about what we've talked about today, it's a way of down regulating, titrating, right? That could be another resource for you.
I actually did remind me of one thing about co-regulation. Studies are coming out now that show that things like musicians, like an orchestra, co-regulates with the audience.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think I meant co-regulating, then not titrating, didn't I? For the power pause, yeah. It's down. You're down-regulating, and you can co-regulate with me.
Yes. Well, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, that's the point I wanted to make. Is even though you're on video, even if you watch it a week later, there's still co-regulation going. You're not going to feel it because you're, electrons on a screen, but I'm going to feel it from you and get, the value of your presence and your calmness and be able to, bring some of that inside myself, which is pretty darn cool. There is no better time for a pandemic than, when we have all the tools that we can stay connected with instead of walling each other up, in the houses.
Very, very grateful that this happened at this time when we can, many of us can connect in these other ways that are not quite the same as being in person, but I think it's a really good next best thing. So,
especially if you're aware of that and you value that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Shay. We'll be back next Friday for the cycle. Yeah. Okay. Bye. Thanks for joining us.